Hey everybody, and welcome to the PC Gamer Show. My name is Tom Marks, assistant editor here at PC Gamer, and slightly getting over a cold. But that's alright, I'm here with James Davenport, our associate editor. How you doing, James?
Average.
Average? That's a very neutral...
It's not bad, it's not good.
Toy Story 2 was okay. If anybody knows Dimitri Martin. Anyway, and we're also here with special guest Will Chesney, video producer here at Future Productions, or Future
Hello.
US.
Future Studios.
There we go.
I think we're called. But I didn't know you were still getting over a cold, or I wouldn't be in this tiny room
with
you.
Yeah,
there's no air circulation.
We're in a giant petri dish.
No, but the good thing is, remember, this room gets so hot that any sort of living matter would just die.
It'll die.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
it'll
true.
Just burn off.
Yeah.
So we'll be okay
great.
By the
I
end of the
so.
Show. And speaking of, we've got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about last week, or the week before last, I got to play XCOM 2, and I fell in love with it very quickly, and we'll be talking about my hands-on time with that. We're going to be talking about how Steam VR was delayed, and Oculus Rift alternatively got a bundled game that will come with it. We're going to be talking about Tribes Ascend getting its first patch in 2 years.
Woo.
Finally, officially gets this patch. And we'll also be talking about CSGO's newest patch, which was its holiday update that added a new gun and kind of screwed with some things. So we'll be talking about that. And plus, of course, we'll be taking your lovely questions from Twitch chat as well. But first, let's start off. And what are you guys playing lately? James, what have you been playing, man?
Oh, boy. I played a PC-ass PC game this weekend.
What does that even mean?
It's just... we're coming up on the end of the year, and I wanted to feel as if I had played everything I should have, which is an impossible task. But I hopped into StarCraft II.
Oh.
The campaign. I'll never be good at multiplayer. I won't.
And that's okay.
Yeah. But I played the original campaign as a kid and really, really liked it, even though I think Wes and I were talking when we were kids playing RTS games. I don't know if you guys did this, but we would always hit a point where my tiny child brain just couldn't comprehend the tactics involved, and I would just, you know, cheat. and it was fun. It was like kind of like just throwing giant armies at each other. Yeah. It was interesting enough as a kid.
I remember all the codes for Warcraft, too.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
It is a good day
endless
to die.
Fun. Endless fun. Endless fun.
Oh, I forgot about those. Yeah. The codes I have stuck in my head are the Sims codes, like Motherlode and Rosebud.
Oh, okay.
Oh
like
wow.
Yeah.
All this came back to me.
I miss cheats in games. I really, really
too.
Do.
That's why I like Fallout 4 is kind of fun.
Yeah, you get console controls. Yeah. It's kind of like cheats.
You can dink around.
But I wish they would call them cheats. Like, I know that's like such a subtle difference, but I wish that they would like just wouldn't have told anybody that the console commands were in Fallout. And like, in order to spawn something, it wasn't just like spawn entity blank. I wish you had to be like type in some password. Like,
right.
The
like,
Institute finds you, and then it spawns, like, a thing or something like that. Like, I don't know. It's such a subtle difference, but it harkens back to the ye olden days, right?
Yeah.
It does. And I miss it. So it was nice in some sense to go back to StarCraft II. I had not finished Heart of the Swarm, even though I thought I did.
so, like, everything was different at the beginning
yeah,
of the
Swarm? Yeah, I was like,
wait.
Whoa!
Who
did
what?
Yeah. I finished Wings of Liberty back when it came out, what, 2011? 20, I don't even remember. And I liked it. I just think playing as Terran is boring. Playing as Zerg, however, is great. It's a lot of fun. The campaign basically empowers you to, in every way, to play as the Zerg. Like, you're always, you can morph certain units based on missions you do. So you can choose a genetic strain that gives them a certain power up and so on. And playing as them is fun because it's all about like making a bunch of units very quickly. So you can just like have a massive, writhing, disgusting army and just, you know, tear apart a base and keep replenishing your Zerglings. And it's a lot of fun. Story is just dumb. I don't know. Do you guys know anything about the story in StarCraft?
I know all about the original StarCraft story.
It's like a space opera. It's like supposed to be melodramatic.
Right? It's sure, it's melodramatic, but the writing, it feels like someone just like made some kind of batch file or code that pulls from just cliched lines from every single space opera out there. It's like nothing, anything, nothing a character says feels original or interesting. It's all just like pull quote nonsense. Whatever, who cares? It's pretty and fun. And then I hopped into the beginning of, Legacy of the Void, which is the Protoss campaign, the new one that came out this year, the final in StarCraft II trilogy. And that was fun. I mean, I'm only in the beginning, but going from Zerg to Protoss is kind of hard because Protoss
are... it's a pretty big swing.
Yeah, the base building and unit generation goes a bit slower. And they're a bit more technical, and I'm a sloppy RTS player. I'm not good at them, so it's been a little harder, but... And the story is just... ugh.
It's, really? See, I heard that this was actually the best one of the three, kind of story-wise and even just campaign in general-wise.
I'm not that far into it, so I can't really judge, but it's... I mean, it's so hard to parse because all the Protoss are named something really... just weird. They have just weird names. It's just a bunch of random syllables thrown together.
I think you're a racist. I think you are racist against Protoss. They have Artanis, Zeratul.
Yeah.
They have real names.
Those kinds of names, and then it's just like all at once thrown at you. It's like, wait, who was the thing? And they all look exact. Oh, geez, I do sound like a racist.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
Yeah,
that's a good sentence to just cut off.
Okay. I'm embarrassed now. But
Protoss hater.
It's cool. It's
would
a good
you,
game.
Would you say that you don't like those people?
I'm going to lose my job.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's okay.
But the campaign's been fun. And I think it made me think that what RTS games are out there anymore? It's like been a PC staple since PC gaming started. But
yeah,
I feel like
this is the new one is important because it's like the end of the story that they started in 1998, 1999.
Oh, way back when.
1998, yeah. So and even to a certain extent, it's this end of the story they started in 2010, with the first StarCraft II. So it's this weird. Even by its own game, it's 5 years long that they're ending.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it just made me think that. I don't know if we're seeing as many RTS games on PC anymore, and I'm wondering if that's because MOBAs have kind of like washed over that kind of gameplay. Not like replaced it entirely, but when people see that isometric perspective and they think about managing units, it's kind of shifted, and you can see that in RTS gameplay over time, like shifted to hero control. Because in the campaign in StarCraft II, there are heroes and everything, and there are moments where it feels like a MOBA sometimes too.
Warcraft 3, definitely.
Warcraft 3. So
that's where the MOBA was invented. Exactly. Was in the Warcraft 3 level editor,
and it just made me wonder what's going to happen to RTS games going forward. And I don't really know the answer to that, but I'm super curious.
I feel like Blizzard will. Stay on top of it. They're going to keep updating, Legacy of the Void for a long time, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And then they'll have something else. Because I feel like part of the reason we don't see any others is just Blizzard has just done it. I mean, if you're going to competitively play in RTS, that's the only one.
Yeah, it's true. And we've seen other RTSs, and we've talked about this on the show a little bit before, but we've seen other RTSs like Grey Goo and stuff like that do well in recent years. But I think the weird thing is you start having to hold them to the same standard of StarCraft, and no game, no RTS at least, will ever hit StarCraft. No RTS will ever be able to live up to the StarCraft, like what StarCraft did. Other games outside of that genre will through esports, but StarCraft just became this thing. It is not You know, yeah. It's not almost completely unrelated to the gameplay now.
Right.
Is what StarCraft has become. You know, it's like, it's an entity. It is a part of PC gaming.
Yeah, I just hope going forward that we still see stuff like Company Heroes and maybe more Warhammer RTS games happen. Because I really like those. And I don't think the genre is dying or anything. I just think it's kind of, it's taken a bit of a break. As you know, it assesses itself because it's a sentient thing, I guess. One last thing I played briefly was last week I met up with some Crytek people and played their new VR game for Oculus on the Oculus platform called The Climb. Cool. And we have a preview up on the site. It's a rock climbing game, which it's too, like, on paper, if you told me Crytek's making a rock climbing game, I would just, what? But I mean, it's pretty cool. What you do is, well, you climb rocks. You climb rocks, and it's done in locales that are like loose approximations of real locations. So this easy mode was in Southeast Asia, and you start off like on a platform. You're looking at a rock wall, and you can kind of see little notches in the rock that kind of pepper the cliffside, and it looks like there's a whole bunch of different routes you can choose. In the demo I played, I had to move my hands by looking, which was kind of weird at first, and I was holding an Xbox controller. So I would look, my hand would kind of, like, if it was within grabbing distance of a notch, would kind of snap to it. It wouldn't grab it until I pulled one of the triggers, the right or left trigger.
Gotcha.
And it's kind of like a, you know, you do that, you pull and release and look up. So I might be holding something with my left hand, left trigger, release on the right trigger, look up, my left hand stays in the same spot, and my right hand's, you know.
Right.
So it's kind of this juggling act, which is really awkward at first. You think they would have demoed it with touch controllers, especially because they say they're supporting touch. But I also understand that touch is not coming out during the launch window for Oculus, so maybe they were like, oh, maybe we shouldn't advertise it as this
if it's not going to be available right away. How was it? I mean, did you feel any vertigo or anything?
That's like the thing.
Hanging up there on the rock wall.
It's kind of crazy. I'm not like super versed in VR. I've tried some demos and I've done a few games like Adrift, and it's reached a point where, yeah, I mean, like, I do feel a sense of place, and I'm scared of heights, so like when you're climbing, you're just looking at a rock wall. You forget, as you do in VR too, that you can look around.
Right.
And there's a moment I had, I remember, because I'm climbing, I'm like, oh, this isn't so bad, and I looked down and I just stomach dropped, as if, and I'm standing there in this room with like Jason Rubin at Oculus Studios and like some of the developers, and my knees buckle and I go, oh shit, like it was pretty embarrassing, but it speaks to the power of that.
Yeah, I bet they were pumped. That was the reaction, actually.
Yeah, and you know, as far as I mean, there and the game kind of changes a bit further from that. You're climbing things and you have to actually like reach and lean your body to make certain grabs.
Oh, to like get in view of
the holes? Yeah, to like, because there'll be a rock face that kind of curves, right?
Right.
And you'll have to like lean your body around. And they didn't have to tell me to do that, which was this really cool, messed up moment. I talk about VR as if it's this abomination. It sort of is, and a beautiful abomination.
Makes you feel terrible things you don't want to feel.
Yeah, your brain is. But yeah, that was really cool. There were moments where you had to switch hands, so you'd have to position one hand above the other and then, like, change triggers real quick.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd, like, risk falling. My heart would leap during those moments. Sometimes there were moments where you'd have to – you can jump in this game. You just press A or something, and you'd position yourself. You'd kind of reach out as far as you could while holding on with one hand and then press A, and your character would leap.
Right.
Which would then, like – also, I would close my eyes every time just on instinct, and grab the ledge on the other side. So it's this really simple gameplay mechanic, but made very complex and thrilling with the addition of VR. It's something I probably would not give a damn about if it was, you know, just on a flat screen, you know, with a motion or gyroscopic controller or something. Right. It would be pretty boring. But in the CryEngine, which is – they've optimized like mad for VR – and they're really excited about that. They kind of went off on this tangent about how hardware manufacturers and graphics engines are all like, you know, they're finally like constrained and forcing themselves to become as optimized as possible because VR needs like 90 frames per second or higher to be
immersive.
Or to avoid making you throw up.
Oh, or that.
Which is, so,
I guess that's a level of immersion.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of excitement surrounding this, and it's a really simple game. They hope a lot of people will be able to play. I don't know if it's, like, going to be – they kind of compared it to – they didn't compare it to, but they were – their language was, we want everyone to be able to play this. We want it to be accessible. And I'm, like, thinking about my mom playing this game. I'm thinking about her, like, dropping to the floor, like – in panic. And I'm like, well, I don't know if this is going to be like the Wii Sports per se of VR, but I certainly think it'll be, it has potential to be something that maybe someone is like, video games, whatever, like hops into and is like, okay, this is like thrilling and interesting and cool.
So, yeah. I mean, and something that's really interesting that is attractive to me about it is what you're describing is something, as you said, that would be boring on a flat screen. So it's like, okay, we have VR. What can we do with it that we can't do? Mm-hmm. You know, whereas, you know, some games are just going to basically be the same as their flat screen equivalent.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
You can look around a little, you know. But actually doing something that can only be done in this new art form, that's really cool.
It's pretty crazy. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So.
That's very cool. And we can talk more a little bit about that later when we're talking about VR as well.
Right.
But I'm curious, Will, you've never been on the show before.
No, never.
You've been behind the camera a few times.
Yep.
But now I finally get to ask you this question. What have you been playing recently?
So there's an obvious answer.
Yes.
That I'll hold off on.
But there's an obvious answer for me.
Well, you know.
And maybe James and no one else. Because I get up here every week and I say Overwatch. And, you know, Tyler gets up here every week and says Rocket League. And Tim gets up here every week and says Hearthstone. And we've got our standards. But nobody knows your standard yet. Nobody knows what you're known for.
Well, I have been playing some Blizzard games recently. I'll start with that. So I've been playing some Hearthstone, like you just said. I just made a total gimmick deck the other day, an Astral Communion deck, which, you know, my win rate is terrible with, but it's super fun when I pull it off. I suddenly, on turn, you know, two or three, have 10 mana and a deck full of giant creatures. So that's super fun. Also playing a lot of Heroes of the Storm. I've been playing pretty consistently that for months now, which is just, you know, keep coming back to it. It's good, good game to play with friends. But my go-to game that I realized recently I have almost 2,000 hours in is PlanetSide 2. Just,
How, like, that is not a thing that you will hear often.
I hear it a lot because of the people I play with. But
right.
That's, like, I have, you know. I mean, no offense to PlanetSide 2 or the people who enjoy that game, because I've never personally played it. But if it's fun, it's fun. You know, that's great. They SOE makes, or Daybreak, excuse me.
Yeah, now they're Daybreak.
Oh, my goodness. What is it? 2015 still?
Yeah.
God.
SOE.
Yeah, Daybreak, they put a lot of love into the games they make, and they support them for a while. And how long have you been playing PlanetSide 2?
For
2,000 hours, you said.
Yeah, so I think it's been about 3 years, maybe 2 3/4, you know. And, you know, I've gone through phases, you know. When I first started playing it, I played it like mad for a couple months and then kind of stopped for 6 or 7 months and then got back into it and kind of haven't stopped. Like Fallout 4 just came out, stopped for like a week to play Fallout 4, and then it was like, well, I kind of prefer sniping in PlanetSide. It's just a little more, you know, so I ended up back in that. And I think what's so compelling is just how massive a first-person shooter it is. I mean, you, both in terms of how many players there are, I mean, you can have 2,000 players on a map, but also geographically. So unlike some other shooter games like Overwatch, In PlanetSide, you can always flank. You can just keep outflanking and outflanking. So you get these crazy battle lines that are just really exciting.
And that's because it's basically like, for those of you who don't know what PlanetSide 2 is, it's basically like an MMO, right?
It's a giant open world.
Yeah.
And you attack covered in like, bases.
Right. You attack these bases that certain factions control and then your faction tries to take control back for.
Right. And you can spawn at the bases and you can spawn at sort of mobile spawn stations. But basically, those bases act like matchmaking lobbies in, like, say, Battlefield or something like that. You know, so you might have like 24 people versus 24 people at one of these bases, but unlike one of these other games, you can just leave that base and walk somewhere else, or drive somewhere else, or fly somewhere else, or have like a huge force that's taking one base. Finish taking it and then just move over to yours. So suddenly, you know, it's 100 versus 100 or, you know, 300 versus 300 are in this one tiny base. So it's pretty, pretty exciting. Great time for grenades.
So. Well, cool.
Yeah, so much fun.
And we can talk also about PlanetSide. I want to, excuse me, talk about that along with when we're talking about tribes later. So that'll lead into that because they are semi-similar-ish, not in play style, but in, like, I feel like they appeal to similar audiences.
They're free-to-play first-person shooters.
They both got a big focus on, like, a big map, I feel like. And that's kind of why I categorize them similarly.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm probably really wrong about that, but that's okay.
I can see the similarities. I can see the differences as well, but, you know.
So
my mother wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Bless her heart. But
as she falls from a rock face playing a VR game. I personally, like I said last week, the Overwatch beta has closed for the winter and the holidays, and I'm very sad about that. But I picked up Rainbow Six Siege, mostly on your glowing recommendation, James.
I like it a lot.
I've been really enjoying it. I've been playing it with Evan Lottie, our former editor-in-chief, and he's been, as we used to call it, tactics dad. Like, basically just teaching me and everyone in the lobby how to play this game. Well, he's absurdly good at that game.
And,
Tactics dad. It's good. Yeah, I think it fits. And we've been playing a little bit, and he was showing me the ropes, and I was really, really enjoying it. I was surprised with how much I was enjoying it. It's compelling. It's very, very fun. And we've talked about Rainbow Six Siege enough. What I want to do is I want to move on to XCOM 2 because that was really like what I played recently that I wanted to talk about. And I played XCOM 2 at the 2K offices coming on 2 weeks ago now, but I wasn't allowed to talk about it until Thursday. XCOM 2, for those of you who don't know XCOM 1, XCOM Enemy Unknown, what are you doing? Go play it.
That's kind of the only way
I can put it. Yeah, it's this strategy, turn-based, squad-based game where if one of your soldiers dies, then they're dead permanently. Yeah. And XCOM 2, the best way I can describe it, and I said this in my write-up about it last week, it is XCOM Enemy Unknown, but better. It is literally the same game, but they made every single part of it just better in every way, right? It's prettier by a significant margin, or not significant, but like it's noticeably more attractive of a game. Right. The combat is cooler. The classes are more nuanced. The talents you pick are more nuanced. The customization of characters is ridiculously deep now instead of before. And I asked them about that too. I was like, why would you want to spend like an hour customizing each of your soldiers when they're just going to die in the next mission and you're going to lose them?
Well, when I first played XCOM, I named it after loved ones, which was a huge mistake. And now that I know I can make them look closer to the people I love.
The faces, there's not much face customization.
Still like 6 or 8 different faces, but the faces themselves were preset.
Yeah, I think we're not talking like Fallout. It's not like little intricacies like that, but I think there are like 5 races you choose from. Okay. And the race is like not skin color, it's like facial structure, basically. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you choose like 6 like preset faces within that like racial thing.
Okay,
Yeah.
So there's, we're still talking like...
There's still a lot of
20
options.
20 or 30, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's still a lot of options.
Plus, then you can set the mood of each soldier. So you can make them like a really serious or they're really happy-go-lucky. And that changes their facial expression.
Okay.
So they look a little different with that too.
Oh, jeez.
Which is cool.
Yeah, it's just... It's very cool. And the thing I'm actually really excited about, and I was going to tell everyone about this, but it doesn't come out until February, is you can save a character to a character pool. We knew about
this a while ago. Right.
You can design a character, you can customize it really in-depth, and then you can save that character's look and like attitude or whatever to a character pool and upload it and export it. So conceivably what you could do is start XCOM 2 at the same time as like 5 or 6 friends. Everybody makes one character, and then you all upload them to each other, and so you all have identical squads.
That's kind of a cool idea.
Then you'd see like who would last the longest and that sort of stuff. Who would die and who's game.
Yeah, we gotta have an office squad.
That would be fun.
I think it'd be really cool, and you can also like you could share your squads with people, which I think is fun.
That's awesome.
So, and then I assume you can, if you start a new game, reload your character. From that pool, I believe. Like if it's a saved custom.
I believe what the reloaded thing is entirely aesthetic, right? So you could save a character that you love a lot and then load it into a new game, and it wouldn't have all of the stats and all that stuff, but it would look the same.
So what I'll do is just every time one of my soldiers dies, I just take one of my other soldiers and make them look like that soldier. It's like the families that when their dog dies,
they
just get a new dog and name it the same thing.
Oh my god! I want to make everyone in white armor and like have helmets and just make a stormtrooper like clone army. Make them all identical.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways to play. Yeah. And I mean, people will eventually mod that in because the modding support. I didn't realize this until I went to 2K. They're making literally all or nearly all of the content in the game publicly available. All of the models, all of the textures, all of the coding and scripting for
that
the game.
That is amazing.
All of the sound and audio files.
Who does that?
2K, apparently, or Firaxis.
It's so smart.
Firaxis is literally what they said. Jake Solomon, the director of the game, said to me, he was like, we looked at the Long War mod, which was this great, great mod for the original XCOM Enemy Unknown, that kind of – it was a complete total conversion mod.
Right.
And he was like, we looked at what they had to do, and they had to like reverse engineer certain files like scripts and stuff like that to be able to get these things and mod the game the way they did. And he was like, we felt bad that they had to do that and we just want to make it easier this time.
Yeah.
We want to see total conversion mods like that. Common.
That's going to extend the life of that game.
Yeah,
forever.
I was going to say it'll give it major legs.
Yeah,
just being able to push it out.
It's already got this emphasis on replayability because I was talking. I was talking with Maxwell from Games Radar, who also went to 2K for this demo. And we were talking about the one mission we had. Well, we all got to do like the same first two tutorial missions, and then. Like a random mission and a black site mission. And the black site mission is like a story mission, basically. And the random mission was hack an advent computer. And the advents are these aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And that advent computer mission was – that was all the description you got. It was in West India, I think, and it's hack an advent computer. And everything else of like the layout and the looks and the time of day and the weather and all that is randomly generated every time you play a map. So I was talking about – we were talking about this mission, and we had a similar enough experience playing it that we could be like, oh, yeah, when we were pushing up to the building or whatever. And then he was like, yeah, but my computer was in the back of the church, and so I had to, like, storm through one of the windows on the side of the church. And I was like, what church are you talking about? And he was like,
wait a sec.
It was in the back room of that church. And I was like, mine was in a gas station. Like, what did
which
I
you blew up?
Which
half
I
of.
Blew up. Yeah. So
nice.
I was like, I literally looked at him. I was like, did I blow up a church and not realize it? Like, am I a terrible person? But no, we just had like vastly different experiences of the same, like the same mission.
And that's very cool.
It's part of that replayability. I'm really excited for it. Basically, I came away from that just being like, I want to play XCOM 2 right now. Like, I just want to keep playing that
How
game.
How long do we have to wait now?
February.
Yeah, that's not that bad.
That is soon.
Yeah.
It's really soon.
Oh,
I mean, considering
man.
It was supposed to come out in November.
Yeah, we get to watch Star Wars coming up, and then just in another couple months. Then we'll be able to kind of live off of that for a little while.
Sustain us.
And then we get to kind of live off that for a little while. And then Game of Thrones comes, what, in April?
Well,
and then Overwatch in the summer.
Yeah.
So we're 2016 set.
You're good.
Man.
Yeah.
You're like, your high-tech game plan is just like your media consumption plan.
And Planetside 2, just, you know.
Just in between.
Add it out. Yeah.
That's the cock. Yeah.
Oh, God. February 5th is XCOM 2.
Nice.
So we,
oh, yeah.
Less than 2 months, you know. Nice. It's really not very far off. And the version I played of it felt like there were bugs here and there. Every time I did something that got me a Steam achievement, it was like, you unlock Steam achievement 47. Steam achievement text goes here, right?
Yeah, right.
Like, so there's still stuff for them to do. Yeah. I encountered a glitch with like a grenade, but it was nothing that made me question whether it was ready or not, if that makes sense.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, every game 2-3 months down the line from when it comes out is going to have glitches like that and is going to have problems like that. So I think it'll be ready. I'm glad that they delayed it.
Yeah.
Make it right.
Yeah. And I'm just excited.
Especially
for
with
it,
the
man.
Mod support and everything.
Oh, yeah. That makes me so happy.
Yeah.
The modding support is going to be insane. This game is just going to live forever. It really, I think people are just going to do incredible things with it. It's going to be so much easier to just say, okay, this is the model for this enemy that I want to replace with this other model. Like, here you go.
Boom.
It's going to turn into Star Wars quicker than we know.
That's just the only thing on our minds.
It's inevitable.
So, I know you didn't get to play the multiplayer at all. Did you talk to them at all about the multiplayer?
In XCOM 2?
Yeah, because that's something in XCOM I actually had a lot of fun with. My friend and I would, like, skirmish.
That's good.
And it's surprisingly fun.
Huh. I'd imagine it would be. I unfortunately didn't get to try that at all. I didn't get to talk to them about that at all. I can't imagine it will differ too much.
Right.
Like I was saying, I think if the trend holds from what else I saw in the game, it will just be the same thing, but they will have fixed some annoyances that you didn't with it, right? Like, that's what they did. That's everything I saw from what they did was just, hey, you know what? This wasn't broken. Mm-hmm. Let's just make it better.
Yeah.
You know, let's just do more.
Cool.
The classes are way interesting, too. I really like the guy with the sword. Because it means
the sword was badass.
Yeah, you can. There's a dude with a sword.
Wow,
he's a ranger. And
he's like a scout kind of.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
He's got the run.
Yeah,
like
his
run and gun kind of thing.
His skill tree is can either go into like a being invisible sort of. It's not really invisible. It's just like
stealthy,
undetected. That's actually something I didn't even talk about in my video. Is that there's every mission since you're now the gorillas, right?
Right.
The plot of the game is that. You lost XCOM 1. The plot of the game is not
Certainly
the
did.
Actual Certainly end of did. XCOM 1. Yeah, exactly. Like, how many times do you have to restart XCOM 1? So the idea is this is a timeline where one of those failed attempts, like, continued and
That's
the
great,
aliens
right.
took over the world. So you're actually, like, the freedom fighter guerrilla forces.
Hmm.
And what that means is that every mission is usually you sneaking up on something or, like, trying to attack a point. So you start the mission in this, like, observer mode where all of the enemies have these ranges of vision where if you step into one of these squares, then they get alerted that you're there.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, you can just kind of, like, sneak your way up and, like, set up people on Overwatch and then, like, alert them. And the second you alert them, like, everything, like, all hell breaks loose and people are running and your Overwatch guys are shooting them. And it's interesting that there's, like, now a little bit of a stealth element to the beginning of every mission. Not, like, too much, but just enough that it keeps it interesting.
That's cool.
And this dude with the sword can either kind of get skills that let him go back into that sneaky mode, or he can just hit people with a sword.
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, in your gameplay, which I edited, so I've seen it all, there's one point where you're kind of pinned down by this one soldier, and you just send your scout just right up in his face and just cut him in half.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, okay, we dealt with that. Great.
And the problem with that then is that that means you can attack while sprinting, right? Usually a sprint using two actions to move really far, double the distance, meant you couldn't attack that turn. But now you can do that where you end with the attack.
Right.
But if that person is, like, in a really not tactically sound place,
Which if
you're in the open.
Yeah, you're in the open. If you're not, if you don't end next to cover, then you're just like standing there, which is usually death in XCOM.
And you've probably just sprinted around behind cover
exactly
in order to get to the person. So
yeah, so it can put you in some weird positions, but it's very, very cool.
I like
The other thing I'm kind of excited about the game is just that they're pushing the sci-fi stuff even further. So like the technology's all a little bit more sci-fi. The aliens, you know, are now out in the open, and they've got all their technology, kind of like turrets that you can hack and all sorts of stuff. But the coolest thing is your base, your home base, isn't underground anymore. Your home base is in a stolen alien transport. So instead of like digging down, you know, to get to like the thermal layer underground, you're discovering these like different rooms of this alien ship. So and there's like alien technology in the ship that's your base. So, you know, it's the same cutaway view. It's like a, you know, a ant farm kind of looking thing.
Yeah.
But you're flying, which is great.
Gotta say, I also am, I haven't been paying too much attention to the media around XCOM 2 just because I want to be surprised. But I've seen images of a lot of the new enemies, and they look amazing.
They're really pretty,
there's
right?
Some really like horrifying, creative enemy types.
Yeah.
Like the first game felt just like it's vanilla aliens. You know, we just got the big one and the little one. And,
yeah.
You know, but this feels it's like you said, more sci-fi. They're really reaching out into like.
Yeah.
Some pretty weird spaces and ideas.
It also feels like they found their art style a little bit more.
It looks beautiful.
Like, not that the – not this is not criticizing the first game like for looking bad or anything.
No, but
like it felt very generic science fiction in the first one, like you were saying. And this one, it feels more like they pushed it in a direction where they like have a little more of their own voice in the design of an
colors
alien.
Colors feel bolder or something.
Yeah.
It's like harder lines. I don't know what it is, but
And those viper things, you know, those snake things?
Yeah, snake people.
Yeah, this isn't spoiling anything. This is just – you find this out really, really quick, like in
– that is a – so
you think
I hate my friends who – they're like, okay, I'm not going to spoil anything in the movie. You find out in the first 10 minutes. I'm like, well, then it's spoiled. The first 10 minutes are spoiled. So I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay.
I mean, you could say it if you want to.
No, I won't then. The snake people are cool. They're really hard, cool enemies.
Cool.
And you'll find something out about them very quickly, insignificantly.
Something very insignificant, sure.
But it's cool.
When I was watching and I figured it out when I was watching your gameplay, I definitely had like an, oh, shit.
Okay, so. Then I'll leave it. Let's move on. Let's actually talk a little bit about VR again, because we found out last week that Steam's VR, the HTC Vive, is going to be delayed into April.
Isn't it the Vive?
Vive?
Yeah.
Vive?
No, it does not.
It's just Vive.
I actually don't know how to pronounce it.
So it could be Vive.
This is why I said Steam VR, because it cuts the conversation.
Yeah.
It cuts that part of the conversation out of it. It was originally supposed to be like limitedly consumer available in November last month.
Yeah.
And that kind of came and went, and the Steam controller and the Steam Link came out.
It's like early access for hardware.
Yeah, basically. Right? Like,
but, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, and you can't really, like, it's understandable. This is the first time. All this stuff is the first time that Steam and Valve have ever done anything hardware.
Yeah.
It's the first time they've ever sold anything physical. So the fact that there are delays and problems with a lot of the things that they're making is not surprising. Not saying any of it is, like, bad. I've heard incredible things from Wes, our hardware editor, about the Vive.
Mm-hmm.
But
Vive.
What? You know what? You know what, Will?
Get out.
Done.
See if we invite you to the show ever again. Yeah.
Tired of this shit.
No. So now they're saying April. And it's funny to me. It's always funny to me when they just, like, someone lets a release window just pass. And then a month later, they're like,
oh yeah,
that's not coming out till April.
Like, yeah. They were a little too quiet about it.
I mean, people are used to Valve being quiet.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, but are we that surprised it's getting delayed?
Yeah.
And so you played that rock climbing game on Oculus Rift, right?
Oculus.
Yeah. But I'm not super surprised that it's delayed.
No.
I just am sad. I like want VR to be a thing right now.
Yeah. I'm not too disappointed that it's delayed though. I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that delays in general aren't a bad thing if it means the product's better.
Sure. Yeah, oh yeah.
Sometimes that's not the case. You get a crappy product either way, and then it's like, well, you made me wait longer for this crap. But so I'm not too sad about it.
I bet they just like, you know, they realize, well, Oculus isn't coming out until next year sometime, which we still don't know the release date. Exactly.
All the details are so cagey.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
VR, man.
No one's committing to anything.
so sick of this. Still lazy. Want VR.
But I bet they were just like, okay, we know, everyone knows that this is not perfect yet. We don't have the games there yet. Why don't we just, you know, let's hold off.
And the games is going to be a big thing, I think.
Yeah.
What's available at launch,
and, you know,
what's been modded to work
Valve,
at launch.
Or excuse me, Oculus is, I think, doing a better job on the game front, pushing their platform. People are not liking the language they're using around it by saying, like, it's Oculus exclusive. It doesn't necessarily mean it's exclusive to the hardware. It's exclusive to the platform, which we still don't know what that is. Which,
right.
You know, it's a program probably. Or
I think it's safe to say that outside of the Steam VR development team and Oculus, nobody wants a PC console war, right?
Right. Sure.
Nobody wants Vive or Oculus to be the dominant thing that gets exclusives. We want them to personally, I want them to compete. I want them to push each other in developing stuff.
But
and
in their technology.
And their technology.
Like AMD versus NVIDIA or something.
Exactly.
You know?
And I don't want that to screw with games, you know? Because even AMD and NVIDIA have these, like, drivers first on NVIDIA, and it's so annoying because then it just means that the game doesn't work for AMD users for the first week, and it's like, just, it doesn't help anybody.
It's gonna be rocky for a while, even if, like, Oculus is saying, you know, even if Oculus games do work on the Vive or whatever Valve VR hardware eventually comes out, it's not going to be day and date for both. There's going to be a lot of you know, tinkering to get stuff working. And
but in Oculus news, they announced that not only are you going to get an Xbox One controller coming with the Oculus Rift, you'll also get Eve Valkyrie.
And
that's a game that I don't think is Oculus exclusive.
No.
I think it'll work on the Vive, but you will get it for free if you buy a Rift.
Which is pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
You guys
played
it?
Yeah, I got to play it at the PC Gaming press conference last E3.
Oh, cool.
Which
I
was
played
super
it,
fun.
Yeah, I played it at PAX a couple of years back or so, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a good get. It's a good get.
That's, I mean, like you were describing with the rock climbing where you sort of had this moment of like, oh, wait, I can look around and then look down. I definitely had that playing Eve Valkyrie where, not Eve, but where you're in this cockpit, it's a space shooter, you know, they're a lot of fun.
You've seen this before.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then you kind of look to the side and you're like, oh, I'm flying a little space fighter. Like,
look at the wing.
Holy hell. Like, and suddenly the 3D space of being in a space fighter just becomes so much more apparent, and it's like, okay, yeah, well, now I'm going to barrel roll and do this loop, and
and it took me a while to relearn flying a ship because I've played all kinds of, you know, space sim or flying sims like TIE Fighter and, you know, Free Space and all that.
Yeah,
and when you realize you can direct your ship while looking around to find other ships and orient yourself, it's very awkward, and people might be off-put by that, but it's something, it's natural.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a really, really good get for Oculus have that be the first thing a lot of people see.
And this is the question, is you two having played this game, at least the demo of it, do you think it will sell Oculuses?
No.
No? Like there, because to
like
me, the bundle, right?
Yeah.
Like there are bundles where somebody's like, oh, I don't really care about a PS4, but I really want to play Destiny, so I'm going to buy the Destiny bundle. You know,
right?
Do you think that there will be a similar effect with Oculus where somebody is like, oh man, I really want to play Eve Valkyrie and I like the Vive more, but I'm just going to buy it Rift because it comes with it.
It'll really depend on how much more content they add to the game.
Yeah.
It was a very, I mean, it was just a demo, but it was pretty thin. It was a really fun space combat. But that's all it was. You know, if it was like Star Citizen and, you know, I know I'm going to get first-person combat and I'm going to get, you know, first-person shooter combat and all this other stuff, sure, but...
Yeah, I mean, you know. it's a launch. It feels like a launch title to me. I mean, right. We've seen it all with consoles before, where most of them are just like proof of concept, a little more shallow, and not necessarily bad, but just, you know, they're out there to push an idea or demonstrate something. And I think as it is, it's good at that.
Yeah.
But like you said, is it just going to be – are we going to fly around in this one space battle? Is there going to be some kind of like upgrading our ship mechanic? Or are we going to be able to go different places? What's
I need unlocks.
Really no one really knows what Valkyrie is. Maybe we do. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. Andy Kelly was very positive about it when he got a more hands-on, a longer playthrough with it recently. Nice. And also Twitch user oh my God, how do I pronounce this? Skrecker.
Hi, Skrecker.
Points out that actually PC Gamer in March reported that Eve Valkyrie was going to be exclusive on PC or Oculus on exclusive on the Oculus on PC at the moment was what they said. So back in March they said it's going to be exclusive for Oculus for now, but we're not ruling other things out.
Right. So that's like Final Fantasy VII Remake, like. First on
it's almost
PS4.
Definitely going to be
and I think a lot of that is because Oculus is obviously funding a lot of these efforts in some way because making a VR game is an unknown right now like what kind of financial risk that is
but making a space game is like that's not an unknown at all. Space sims and like
But I mean just like how many people are going to have an Oculus? How many people are going to, you know, buy them at launch? How many people have it's like there's so much up in the air. VR is the weirdest launch thing ever. It's going to be the weirdest be the weirdest thing ever. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean Elite Dangerous's Horizons update which also has VR support already.
Yeah, that'll be cool to see.
It's Horizons update launched today, which is worth bringing up because it allows you to land on planets and stuff like that. And then also Star Citizen, which I believe has VR support out of the box. I'd be shocked if it didn't,
but
too,
there's so many things that
it doesn't have
to be added to,
but they just got their 2.0 release. Yeah, and for the record, if anybody is wondering, I personally am excited about both of those things, both the Elite Dangerous Horizons update and the Star Citizen 2.0 update. But I don't play either of those games, and I don't think you guys do either. So unfortunately, we're not really much use of talking about it today.
I mean, no. But if Oculus came bundled with Elite Dangerous, that would probably be a sell for me.
Okay, so you just think Eve Valkyrie is just like this unknown?
Yeah, I worry that it just doesn't have as enough content to be like the, I'm going to buy this, you know? Like,
yeah. Personally, I think, and maybe this is like a little later when it doesn't require, you know, a $1,000 PC or whatever to run VR.
Right.
I think stuff like The Climb and, you know, in some kind of bundle.
Yeah,
I don't really know the depth of The Climb yet. What that would look like.
You didn't get the crossbow yet, right? No.
God, but something like that. So maybe Eve Valkyrie is—it's just a space battle, and maybe The Climb is just a couple mountains you run up and down, have time trials, and maybe there's just a bundle like Job Simulator or something is in there too.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how all these games are priced.
Yeah,
then. Because except for goodness gracious, what's that snowy one that's exclusive for Oculus Rift and everyone's upset?
Oh, it's Insomniac.
Yeah, Insomniac's game.
Shoot. They're
doing this 3D puzzle platform, or maybe not puzzle, but they're doing 3D
platformer.
Oh, I
remember seeing that. Yeah.
Let me double check what it
what
is.
It's called.
But that's the only game that I've seen so far, at least in advertising, that feels like a more substantial experience than these other things. Eve Valkyrie might be a larger experience than any of us are expecting.
Yeah, hopefully they'll grow it.
But Job Simulator and like this rock climbing game, like you said, they feel much smaller. And that's not necessarily, you know, a criticism of
One thing really well.
They do one thing really well.
Yeah.
And that's like great, but that's also not like a launch lineup.
No.
No, but I mean I look at something like if you want to do a pack-in or you want something that at someone who just got their fancy new VR goggles and they're like, okay, how do I show this off to people, or how do I, you know, test the capabilities of this thing? I think of Wii Sports, what that did for the Wii, or even the Wii U, but no one bought the Wii U.
Battle Tank 09 in the chat says Edge of Nowhere.
That Edge of Nowhere.
Yeah, there
that's
we go.
Insomniac's Thank kind you. Of platformer game.
But it'd be nice to have something that's packaged that demonstrates, you know, everything about the Oculus rather than just like...
So you can just play right when you get it. I mean, that's the kind of the nice thing. You don't have to be like waiting for a title.
But. Well, maybe the launch lineups are gonna look like a smattering of these little just kind of distraction games, and then games that are already out but have VR support, right?
Right.
Elite Dangerous is already out and already has VR support. Minecraft will have VR support. It already has, like, modded in VR support.
Right.
And it will have official support. So maybe what we're looking for is not to expect these fleshed out incredibly large VR experiences to be ready in the next 4 months, but just a lot of really good small proof of concepts, and then we can expect bigger games once VR has been more adopted, because it's probably a huge risk for a company to like invest in an untested technology to make a huge game. It's absurd.
It's scary.
Well, and it reminds me of I can't remember who I was talking to the other day, and they were saying that you know, Minesweeper and Solitaire were originally bundled with Windows to teach people how to use a mouse. You know, it's to teach people how to double click, how to right click, how to, you know, click and drag, stuff like that. So I could see some of these games, you know, kind of teaching people what the VR experience is. You know, this is how you navigate menus with the VR. This is how you get into these little like space games or whatever.
Yeah, and we've seen similar things, and this is not PC, I know, but we've seen similar things with every time Nintendo releases a new console with a gimmick, right? You like you said, you have Wii Sports, and for the record, I love Nintendo, but Wii Sports was this little distraction that they released with it. Nintendo Land was a little distraction that they released with the Wii U. And they do serve a purpose. They serve a very, very important purpose. I'm just hoping that VR doesn't go the way of Nintendo, where they release these very kind of cool little games to show off their technology, and then nobody ever uses their technology again. You know, like every game, every worthwhile game for the Wii U from after launch basically didn't care about the second screen, right?
Yeah. But, you know, it's the PC, which is, you know.
Yeah.
It's our love, and it's people like it because it's an open platform, and people will develop, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff for it if the hardware is there and if it's supported. So I'm more hopeful than I've ever been for a Nintendo gimmick for VR.
Yeah, I think I've said this before on the stream, but there was the saying that I believe Wes told me or somebody told me of there are two types of opinion. There are two opinions when it comes to VR, right? Yeah. And I've said this before and I'll say it again because it's a great quote, which is two types of people who opinions of VR, which is somebody who thinks it's going to change the world of gaming and it's going to be this amazing revolutionary thing, and the person who's never tried it.
Right.
And that's the gray area, right? Like, there is none. So I'm excited for it to come, and I just want it to be here, and I'm frustrated that it's delayed till April again. Because honestly, if they told me that the Vive was like $800 and it was coming out right now and had like a game come with it, I might buy it. I would find a way. I would sell something else, right?
Well, like, I mean, at the very
I don't need two kidneys.
Sell your Nintendo.
Our jobs are going to be fun. It's going to be a fun year.
Don't joke about that, Will.
It's going to be a good year for us, though. We're going to have fun.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Well, we can move on then. Yeah. Let's talk about Tribes Ascend.
Yeah.
Which update. It's got its out of the blue update today. Which
great
is
name for an update.
Yeah, it's a good name. Although somebody said that it should be named the From the Grave update.
Oh. Ouch.
For those of you who don't know, Tribes Ascend is made by Hi-Rez Studios. We've talked about it before on the show. It's by the folks who made Smite and all that. And they didn't create Tribes, though. It was just like this was their next game in a long storied lineup, and the old Tribes games are very, very, you know, they're stately. They hold a high place of honor in the PC gaming world. And 2 years ago, basically Hi-Rez abandoned it. And they felt really bad, and a lot of the community didn't like where Tribes was at, and they just let the player base die, and they felt awful about this. And then a couple months ago, they started updating the game again in this public test realm, and they stripped out basically all of the progression in it. They took out all of the, like, unlocking guns. They took out the – they reduced it to 3 classes from 9. Originally what it was right. 3 weight classes, like light, medium, and heavy, and then – 3 classes within those weights, and now it's just all of the equipment and items are available to a specific weight.
Right.
So you don't have to get pigeonholed into these very, very specific roles anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. If you want a certain weapon with a certain ability, you can mix and match and do that, which is kind of cool.
And
you still do have to unlock them, though.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Still some of the weapons and stuff you have to unlock.
Oh, I was wrong about that. I'm sorry.
But you can customize more specifically.
Gotcha. Yeah. And there's also, I believe they did strip out some of the progression. They simplified the progression, I believe, is the better way to put it.
Then. Yeah. I mean, from what I was just playing before the stream, it's one unlock isn't based on having unlocked something else. You can kind of unlock anything at any point as long as you have the experience to spend.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe they changed it up. They made things, basically they made it less like a game, like they made the unlocking less gamey, right? They made it easier to unlock what you wanted to unlock.
Yeah. Good.
I think it's awesome. I'm really excited to dive back into Tribes. So one of the first things I want to lead with is I was looking at the Steam chart numbers for it. Mm-hmm. If anybody doesn't know what Steam chart is, it just tracks how many people are playing a game at a current time. And basically, like 100 people is the peak that Tribes has gotten for the last 2 years. Like every day at peak hours, it'll be about like 116 people playing the game, right. And then it'll dip down like 50 on off hours, and that's kind of all the people. It had a very, very, very dedicated, incredibly small player base, right? Mm-hmm. Just to give you an idea of how small that is comparatively, Evolve, which we've talked about having basically no community and not many people are playing it and nobody really cared about it for a very long time, usually hovers around like 300 to 600 people. So that's how much – it's smaller than that, and we already considered that like nobody was playing it. Since they updated the game a couple of days ago, it jumped up to about 500 peak.
Nice.
And it's kind of starting to dwindle. It's only been like a couple of days since the peak was hit, and now it's starting to go back down. My first question is there hope? Like, is there hope for this game to get a community back around it that's bigger than a couple hundred?
It has a couple things going for it. One is, you know, it's a game that's been out for a while now. I mean, obviously it's got the update, but it's a little bit older. So your system requirements are not very taxing. Mm-hmm. Also, the file size is very small, and it's free to play. But, you know, I just downloaded it this morning to kind of like brush up before the stream. And, I mean, you know, we've got a nice connection here, but it downloaded really quickly. You know, it was just a couple gigabytes, and then I was in. That's really appealing. Also, super easy to get into just like a match. It just throws you into a match super fast. There weren't like, you know, a ton of loading screens or anything like that. It was just like, you know, multiplayer, join, team deathmatch, and then like a few seconds later I was playing. So
super low barrier to entry.
Yeah, yeah. So and that's attractive.
It's got really – I mean, there's a reason that Tribes is a loved series. It's got really unique combat. For anybody who doesn't know the Tribes series, like, you're skiing is what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what they call it. And you have a jetpack, and then basically, like, you can just go no friction on any sort of surface or slope. And all the maps are huge, and they're, like, mountainous. They have all these bumps and hills. So the whole, like, deal of – how you're supposed to move in the game is slide down a mountain, and then as you slide up the other end of it, like, jetpack up and you're just suddenly like gliding through the air uncontrollably to a degree. But the best players can get going so fast.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the weapons and abilities, well, not a lot. Some of them are based on like damage based on how fast you're going, or like energy regen based on how fast you're going and stuff like that. So they kind of play with that.
And most of them are not hit scan weapons. For those hit scan, for those of you who don't know, is like a machine gun in Call of Duty or Soldier 76 in Overwatch, if you have been paying attention to that, is a hit scan gun where it's like you point at it, and when you click the mouse, the bullet basically hits wherever you're pointing.
Yeah, it's like instant bullet time.
Yeah.
And there are a couple guns like that in the game, but they're, you know, it's like a sniper rifle or something. It doesn't do a ton of damage.
Yeah, as opposed to a rocket launcher where you can see the projectile going through the air and then it hits. And like the spin fuser is like the classic Tribes gun,
which I played a lot of Star Siege Tribes, the original, and it was called the disc launcher back then. But yeah, it's just this very slow projectile, and so you're leaping through the air, and your opponent's leaping through the air, and you're trying to figure out where they're going to land and hit your disc right where they land. And that's like, that's kind of the default weapon almost. It's like given to all the classes. You know, there's a light version and a heavy version, which affects the damage and stuff. But this sort of, that's the assumption that that's the weapon you're going to use, is this kind of like massive damage, really slow.
And so
disc launcher.
Yeah, and so the skill of the game becomes like, how fast can you be sliding while also predicting where they're going to be sliding, like 3 seconds ahead of when you fire the gun. And
oh yeah,
it can make for these, it's incredibly kind of hard to pick up initially, but it can just make for these amazing moments.
Oh yeah,
I'm just glad that Hi-Rez is supporting it again.
Super cool.
Yeah,
and if you're at all interested in it, even like, you know, passingly, just like, what is this? Like Will said, it's free to play, it's got low system requirements, and it is small. So just try it, I guess, is what I want to say. And I mean, this is very like, I know this sounds very like pitchy from me, but like genuinely, I just want to see a community around Tribes again. I loved the Tribes series. I liked Tribes Ascend even when it was supposed to be bad back in the day, like 3 or 4 years ago. And I just, I want to see it. I want to see it succeed again, because Hi-Rez has already said they're not planning on making any money off of this game. Like, it's costing them money to work on it, and they know they're not going to get profitable from it. So I want to see it just, like, have a player base again. Like, that's all I want for it.
And I kind of feel like that's why they did the update, is they were like, man, we kind of had this game that we've been sitting on. Some people are still kind of into it. Let's just give them this, you know, even if that's it. Like, I wonder if they're going to keep updating it after this.
They have, like, when I talked to them at TwitchCon, which is a couple months ago, they said that they have about 4 to 5 people dedicated to Tribes now.
Wow.
And, you know, in a studio like Hi-Rez, where they have hundreds of people working on Smite, that's not, like, that's a minuscule team.
Right.
But it is people in the studio who their job is to develop that game. Even if it's
that's
not many,
cool.
They are devoting consistent resources to it.
So they're not like, here, we made it a little better, the update's out, do your thing.
Yeah, no,
we're done.
They're not stepping away from it yet. Like, development is probably going to be very, very slow on it, but they're not just walking away now that they've done the update.
Yeah.
If it's not your type of game, that's fine. Like, I don't mean to sound reverendy here or anything, but like, I'm very excited that the game is getting updates, and I'm very excited that the Tribes, like, legacy is not going to get, like, diminished like it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my 2 cents for the day.
Yeah.
That was a very, like, impassioned speech I just gave. I'm sorry about that.
No, don't be.
So the other thing that when I was playing Tribes earlier, it kept reminding me of is recently I started playing Rats Instagib, which, of course, is a hit scan weapon. You're a bunch of rats in a room,
as the name would imply.
Yeah, with just this laser gun that instantly hits whatever you're aiming at, and that's the only weapon. There's nothing else. But it's similarly, you know, a tiny player base, and everybody is like leaping around like maniacs, just trying to hit each other. And that's kind of what it felt like in a good way, just with a very different weapon style.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's another very tiny game that's not free to play, I don't think.
Rats? No,
yeah,
it's not.
It's not.
But it's also a very, very good shooter with a very small, like, dedicated community. So which, yeah, now that you've played fun. Tribes,
yeah,
is it going to replace Planetside 2?
Well, nothing could ever replace Planetside 2.
you did that thing. So yeah. Tell us about the time that I think I might have mentioned this on stream before, actually, of that you did the treasure goblin.
Oh
in
yeah.
Planetside.
So I've been really into Blizzard games my whole life. Recently, though, is what I was going to say. So, you know, I was playing Heroes of the Storm, and they had a Treasure Goblin, like, event going on where the Nexus was, you know, invaded by a bunch of Treasure Goblins. So at the start of every match, a little Treasure Goblin would appear, and all the players would kind of, like, hunt it down before the match actually started, and you'd get some, like, bonus gold or whatever. And, of course, Treasure Goblins come from Diablo 3, which is what all this was about. In Diablo 3, if you get the Treasure Goblin, you get some sick loot and gold and all that. So I created a character in Planetside 2 called Treasure Goblin and just ran around with a Stalker Cloak, which is a regenerating cloak that doesn't let you use your main guns. You can only use a pistol. And if you hold still, your cloak regenerates. So you never have to uncloak.
And that's invisibility cloak.
That's invisibility cloak, yes.
Yeah.
So just run around. One of our old employees works for Daybreak Games and gave me a bunch of codes for a special edition weapon. So I would just run around typing into the, like, area chat, you know, little treasure goblin-y things like hee hee hee. It's like that. I'd just run around for, you know, like 5 minutes at a battle, and if somebody got me, I'd send them a code. and if not, I'd be like, oh, I got away, and like respawn in a different battle and start my like woohoos again. Yeah. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. So if you ever see that on there, kill me because I'll give you a code.
I just love random acts of free stuff like that.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah.
It's always nice.
Yeah, super fun.
I'd be interested to see the player numbers on Planetside, actually, because we can't look that up in Steam charts. So,
right.
But I'd be interested to see what the numbers, like the player base of a game like that compared to like other shooters is, because I feel like it has a pretty dedicated community.
Yeah.
But that game is also like not really trying to impress anyone right now, if that makes sense. It exists and is doing its thing.
They're definitely doing updates. They've had this big update that they've been planning for a while where they're going to add constructibles to the game, like basically buildable bases.
Whoa.
I'm not sure where they are with that. I know it's not anytime soon that would be coming. But so they're definitely adding new content. They added a sniper rifle for the engineer class recently that does really high damage to one of the heavily armored units, which is called a max. So it's like a mech suit. And they're just a pain in the butt. So they added in this gun to kind of help people sort of mitigate the max crashes, is what we call them. Everybody pulls a max and just swarms a base.
I feel like this is what you feel like, James, every time me and Tim talk about Hearthstone.
Yeah. Just glaze over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
But, yeah, so they're adding content.
Yeah, they're updating.
They're doing a big Christmas sale right now with, like, exclusive armors and stuff every day, camos.
Gotcha.
So.
I love holiday sales.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, super fun.
Well, speaking of holiday things, we can move on.
Yeah, that was a good transition.
Nice. I am a professional. Done. I get paid to do this.
That's true,
okay,
actually.
The CSGO Counter-Strike Source.
Uh-oh.
No. Wow.
Yeah.
See, I'm a professional.
No
now
controversy.
I'm just stumbling over my words. Counter-Strike Global Offensive got a new holiday patch recently, and the world caught on fire.
Yep.
Yeah.
Reasonably so.
The most important part of the patch, the biggest thing that everyone was talking about, of course, was that the chickens in the game.
Get out of here. Come on.
The chickens in the game all got little holiday jumpers.
That's so great.
They
so got, not what I expected you to say.
They all got little ugly Christmas sweaters, and because there's just chickens everywhere in the CSGO world, apparently. And they're all over all the maps, and those chickens are on that little adorable red sweaters. And it's amazing.
It's
and that's
good.
The best part of the game.
I think it's kind of game-breaking, though, because now your eye goes to this red... chicken sweater where you think it's like a blood splat or something, but it's just a chicken and you think that there's someone there and there's not. It's totally game breaking.
I've been noticing that actually too on streams is like somebody will turn a corner when I'm watching them stream and like out of the corner of my eye, I'll just see like a flash of red and I'll be like, what? Oh, it's a chicken.
It's a chicken.
Never
with a sweater.
Mind. Yeah. No, the really big thing that these guys were expecting me to say was the R8 pistol. The R8 revolver, excuse me. They added a gun to the game called the R8. It's a revolver kind of like six shooter, but I think it has 8 bullets in it. And when they released this gun, it was probably the most overpowered thing to be added to this game ever, and maybe any game ever. It was as strong as the op sniper rifle, so meaning it was if you were in range, which is like a medium, short to medium range for the gun, it was a one-shot kill on any person anywhere on their body, not even head. You just could look at them and tap the button and kill them. And even if they were wearing armor, it would kill
them. Right, because it's armor piercing.
Yeah. The catch was it shoots slower, but not slower.
The catch is that you have to click and you kind of cock the gun and then fire it. But it didn't matter because, like, they wouldn't be able to kill you in the time that it took for you to, like, cock that gun. And it was so overpowered that it got nerfed within, like, 3 days? I think three days after the patch.
It's still a problem from what I hear, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not entirely there yet.
Because the nerf was they basically made the cocking time longer.
Longer.
So the time between when
damage.
You shoot and when the bullet actually leaves the gun.
I think it also does a little less damage.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. It's just amazing to me that Valve could so quickly realize that they screwed up and not realize that beforehand. There was a theory, actually, that I saw a couple people saying that they think that Valve, because this is literally the third time that they've added a pistol to the game that's been completely broken, overpowered on launch and then been nerfed later. The other ones took a little bit more time to nerf, but it's still the third time this has happened. And somebody came up with a theory that Valve intentionally releases guns overpowered. Because the Counter-Strike community is kind of known for being very, very resistant to change. They don't like new things, right? So what they do is they release a gun that is so strong, they have to use it. They have to try the gun because it is just absurdly broken and you will lose the game if you don't. And then everyone like kind of starts understanding what this gun is, and then they bring its numbers back into line with what they actually like wanted them to be in the first place.
It's like tricking people to like use it, hate it, get outraged, and then they're happy with the fixed version.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like
actually,
that theory,
we
too.
Do that to you guys sometimes when we're editing your videos. We'll put in, like, one thing that's, like, obviously wrong in the video. Our camera guy's yelling at me right now behind the camera. Like, don't tell them. So put in one thing that's obviously wrong, so then you'll see that. Tell us to fix that. We've already fixed it. We've already got a version ready with it fixed. And then we just, they're like, oh, yeah, here. Here's the approved version. We don't do that. But that is a technique
quickly covers
for dealing with touchy clients.
Right. Mm. Well, maybe they did that. Maybe they didn't. Yeah. Regardless, they realized that the gun was broken pretty quick. There were some other changes in that update, too, like they changed spray patterns or they changed spray like randomness. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are complaining, and I love that for so long people have been whining about RNG and Hearthstone. Yeah. I'm trying real quickly on a side note. I'm making a very concerted effort, and I hope everyone appreciates this, to say Hearthstone from now on instead of Hearthstone because the amount of hate I've gotten for saying Hearth is just absurd. So people have been complaining in Hearthstone for so long about RNG. It just feels wrong. Anyway. About RNG and like, oh, the game is just randomness. James, you just want to run.
Gotta go.
And now people are complaining about RNG in like a game like Counter-Strike, which to me is just like the epitome of skill is Counter-Strike.
Right.
So that's so funny. I feel like at a certain point people just like to whine.
Yeah.
But not saying that their grievances are not founded, but the internet likes to complain to a certain degree. We'll see how these changes pan out. Maybe they do need to get reverted. A lot of people are not happy with them.
I mean, I think it changes the emphasis on some of the gameplay a little bit. I mean, you know, a number of the rifles got basically nerfed where the time it takes for your inaccuracy to go away, like, you know, if you've had a couple shots, mm-hmm. you know, your inaccuracy goes up the more you shoot. So the amount of time that takes to decay back to normal is now increased on a couple guns, which puts a lot more emphasis on your first shot, but also devalues range a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think that could be a shift. And then, of course, you know, with the R8 revolver, since it's like one shot and then you've got this long time before your gun resets to take your second shot even, which will also take a long time to leave the chamber, there's a lot of emphasis on that one shot. So I think it's promoting accuracy, right? Mm-hmm. It's also maybe trying to get people to try different tactics, like, I don't know.
And there's nothing, yeah. like, to a certain degree, like I said before, the Counter-Strike community is very resistant to change, but there's nothing right. wrong, in my eyes, with a game being patched just for the sake of shaking up the meta. Like, League of Legends, every season they change the jungle, right? And it's not like the last jungle wasn't, you know, maybe they wanted to fix this and that, but they don't need to just change the jungle. And this season with League of Legends, they're changing almost all of how the AD carries and the marksmen's work. And it's just to shake things up.
Yeah, and I mean, it's sports experience the same thing. It's not like they're static. Their rules change yearly all the time. It's, yeah.
Something WIDS TV in the chat brings up that CSGO doesn't run any kind of beta or test client in the way that Dota 2 does, which I do agree is kind of a crappy thing that they don't introduce these, because the excuse before was that CSGO wasn't big enough to require a beta client, and I think it's absolutely big enough now.
And people like to be able to like jump onto like a public test server and like,
and there was this huge tournament too that was happening literally like 4 days after they patched the game, and all of the players for the CSGO tournament were already at the tournament. They had to fly there. So the ESL was like, we're not going to be using this new patch. They haven't had any time to practice on it. We're not going to give them 3 days to learn this new patch while they're jet lagged before a major tournament. Right. And so they just didn't use that patch for the tournament. And in a weird way, they released this patch and the pro scene just like stalled for a week because they had to. Like, what were they going to do, you know?
Pretty disruptive.
I mean, that is kind of fun, though. Like, you guys are all great at this game. You know, now we're going to change something. Yeah. Yeah. How well do you do when we throw this in there? You know?
Hearthstone did a similar thing with Patron. They nerfed Warsong Commander right before the World Championships.
Yeah.
It's a thing. And so here's a question I asked before the stream to you guys, and I want to talk about it now. How much, and this is a weird question, so I know it's a weird question, but how much does a game developer like have the right to fundamentally change their game? And to me, that's a weird question because also like they of course have the right to, but the game developer is the one making the game. They're the one who decides what they want to do. If they want to add this gun that nobody understands why they would put it in the game, then they have every right to do so. It's their game. But at the same time, the people who are competing, the people who are streaming it, the people who are running the tournaments are not the developer. They're the ones who are responsible to a certain degree for the overwhelming success of the game as an esport and thus the game as a whole. So how much does Valve personally owe to the community to just not screw with them? And how much are they allowed to just kind of do their thing?
I don't know. They're allowed to do their thing. It's their game, and sure, they're supported by these people. But I think the reason the game is a success is because they, you know, Valve didn't make Counter-Strike themselves initially, but, you know, they've nurtured it into something good and that has staying power. And, you know, they're very, very smart and should be trusted to, you know, experiment with the game to an extent.
Right.
But, you know, it would be really silly to just ignore their community's response outright.
Which they didn't. They patched.
Yeah, yeah. So,
again.
Yeah.
Though a lot of people say not enough.
But sure, right. Yeah. It's to what degree? That's kind of a weird amorphous space. I worry about communities being overly toxic and holding the developer hostage in a way over changes because maybe they don't understand. You know, these Valve is. They are very, very, very smart developers doing this stuff, and their data crunching is just – it's bonkers. No one really does it like them. So I don't know. I think upfront, Valve should just be able to do what they want. Developers should be able to do what they want. Communities – Just be nice, be patient. These things, like, games are very difficult to balance and do perfectly the first time. It's expected that they're going to be a mess with these kind of things. And
Will, you were shaking your head
yeah.
there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I've complex feelings on this. But at the end of the day, games like this, like, you know, CSGO, like Planetside, you know, even like Tribes – The player base, the community, is the content of the game. You know, like Hearthstone, yeah, it's competitive, but, you know, you've got all these cards, all this stuff. But, like, with something like CSGO, I mean, it's the players that make it interesting. It's, you know, the strategies and the skill shots and knowing A and B and, you know, when to go to the bomb, you know, all this stuff. Like, as a team and as a community, that stuff develops, and that's what's really interesting. And so alienating your players by, you know, throwing something crazy in there, I think isn't necessarily a good thing, because if you start losing players, when the players are your game, that's a problem.
Sure.
That being said, the big issue with these updates and, you know, with their 3 day later nerf and stuff is the whole problem with having a community with a small vocal minority who are going to whine and whine and whine and get something nerfed or get something changed just because a couple people don't like it, you know, and they don't necessarily reflect the rest of the community's opinion. And that's really the issue.
Well, that's the scary thing with all games that do changes like that the community disagrees with, is it's almost impossible for a developer to see how many people are actually talking, right? Like, there's always going to be or to an extent, there's going to be the same number of people screaming on the internet no matter what you do and no matter what percentage of the whole they represent. Mm. So in this case, the CSGO community could as a whole be completely outraged with the patch, or it could be 1% of them outraged at the patch. But either way, the subreddit is in flames, and that's all that Valve can see.
Right.
You know?
What they should do is they should put, I mean, you know, they're programmers, for God's sakes, in your map loading screen or whatever, in your matchmaking screen, a little window pops up with a little, just like a little checkbox. Do you like this? Check. Done. Yeah. There.
And
done.
BattleTanks09 asks, what happens when the community is massively outraged, though, a clear majority? Does the dev need to go back? And the answer to that, in my opinion, is they don't need to go back. They don't need to do anything. But if you've massively outraged your community, I think you've screwed up somewhere else down the line, right?
Yeah.
It's you've made a mistake that you shouldn't have made, essentially. And so either you need to accept that and adjust, or you need to say, you know what, no, we're going in a different direction than the majority of our player base. And if some of our player base leaves, then we have to be okay with that. Like, if a developer consciously says, the majority of our player base does not like this, and we're okay with that, and if they leave, then we're okay with that, then they can do whatever they want. It's just they have to be conscious of the fact that that's happening.
Right.
And if they're not conscious of the fact that that's happening, then they'll kill their game.
Right, especially if it's, like we're saying, like I'm saying, a game where the players are the content. But that's interesting, too. I mean,
what you just said made me think of Facebook updates. You know, like every time Facebook has had an update in the last 10 years,
yeah,
people are outraged and they're like, this is the worst thing. And then within like 2 weeks, they're using it and they're happy. And then the next time there's an update, everybody's like, what is this? But they've gotten used to what the changes were from the last time. So I don't know. But at the end of the day, this whole market is it's a consumer-based market. You know, I mean, in theory, your players and their money, you know, speak to their opinions. If people stop playing the game, then you know. So I think that developers are sort of beholden to their players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's I agree and disagree. I think it's a very complex problem. Because I totally agree with what James is saying, too, about, you know, I don't ever want a developer to feel like they can't do something they want to do, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if a developer says, oh, this is something I'm really passionate, like, we're really passionate about, and we really want to add this to our game, and we think it'll be great, I don't want them to feel like our community is going to eat us alive, we can't do this, because that just staggers creativity, and it staggers progress, and it staggers development in a way that you don't want to stagger. But let's open it up too, because there are lots of good things being said in the chat.
Cool.
So
yeah.
Let's open up to our Twitch chat Q&A portion of the show. If you have any questions for us, use the tag @PCGamer in the Twitch chat, and we will be able to see your questions and read your questions. Doesn't have to be about CS:GO. Doesn't have to be about competitive patches or anything like that. You can just let us know what you want to do. I'm going to plug in my computer. So
it should probably.
Because it just said 10% so that we can actually read the questions.
And I'll only take questions about PlanetSide 2. So I'm just, no.
Seriously, anything on your mind in PC gaming that you have questions about, please let us know. If you are watching on YouTube or listening on iTunes or the website or PodTrack or anything like that, then please come and join us, twitch.tv/PCGamer, Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific time, and we will be able to answer your questions here live for you.
Mm-hmm. Get them answered.
Real quick shout-out, I did want to say this. We have been starting to use PodTrack, which is a free podcast tracking kind of stats service, and I do want to give them a shout-out just for saying thank you, because it is free and available, and if you're doing a podcast, please check out PodTrack, spelled with a C, not with a C-K. Let's see if we have any questions. V890 asks, PC Gamer, why do you think the latest Tomb Raider game seems to have sold so badly, and what does this mean for PC release?
Oh, it's obvious. It's obvious.
Opinions.
It came out, was it day and date with Fallout 4?
Yep.
And it was on the Xbox One, which is...
exclusively.
It's not like no one has an Xbox One, but it's kind of in the console war, so to speak. It's between PlayStation 4 and it. It's not doing as hot, so it got buried, I think.
Do you think that's part of why it's coming to PC or potentially coming to PC so quickly? Because there was the rumor, right, the idea that it's going to come out like January 29th on PC, which is literally months before I would have expected it to come out.
Right.
I'm not that surprised, because I think they had a year exclusivity deal for consoles, if I'm not mistaken. Which means like it can't come out on PlayStation 4 until like this next holiday. Right? Yeah. The PC is excluded from that. So I don't know. It gives them an opportunity to market it now and then later. Hopefully, so they can get kind of two punches in, so to speak. I don't know. I'm not that surprised. The first game, if it's running on the same engine, which I think it is, it ran pretty dang well on PC. So it's not like they had too much work to do there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Could be cool. I think the Fallout 4 thing is really hard, because there's a...
It's so hard.
I mean, they're very different games, but there's still a similar vibe, you know?
They're very different games, but what they are is they fill the same experience. They are a epic, single-player, big journey kind of game, right?
Yeah.
So when you think, oh, man, I just want to sit down with a single-player game, Fallout 4, The Witcher, Metal Gear Solid, Tomb Raider, Dragon Age, they all fall into that category. Whether they're very different games play style and like theme wise, but you're not going to ask someone to play Fallout 4 and Tomb Raider in the same week.
Right.
You know,
right.
You just can't.
Right. It's a commitment of energy, you know, just, yeah.
But people really, really like the game. GamesRadar gave it 4.5 out of 5.
Nice.
So, supposed to be pretty dang good. There are a lot more tombs in this one, I hear.
Nice. Yeah, that's what I've heard, too. So. It's a little bit more of a throwback in terms of, like, the actual rating of the tombs.
Kai Phoenix asks, I'm looking for a new monitor for general PC gaming and PS4 usage. We won't hold that against you. Best bang for buck for $200 to $250 range. What do I need to look for in a monitor these days? So I'm not going to give any like specific monitor examples because I don't know monitors that well. but what I will say is, first, don't be afraid to look for factory refurbished monitors. A lot of the time you can get cheaper monitors than you would expect. My monitor was $100, and it should have been like $300. Nice. And it's an IPS, 24-inch, 1080. The things I would say is, if you're going for a 27-inch monitor, make sure it's 1440. If you're going for a 1080 monitor, make sure it's 24 inches or lower. Yeah. If you go 27-inch 1080, it looks kind of crappy. The pixel ratio kind of starts getting... It doesn't look – 24 inches is the sweet spot for 1080p monitors. Yeah, yeah. What I would say is try to get an IPS monitor or a PLS, I think is Sony's version of that. Basically, PLS is one brand version of IPS. It's slightly better. IPS, for those of you who don't know, is basically like – it's called in-plane switching. It's a way of the monitor produces color. And produces the image you see, and it's significantly better color balance and true. Like it's more true to the colors that you would see that you expect to see, basically.
Nice.
So look for an IPS monitor, but also look for a low latency IPS monitor because the problem with IPS monitors originally, and this is a problem that's very quickly going away, is that if you went IPS, it wasn't good for gaming because it was a higher latency. You kind of didn't see you get a little bit of a mouse drag and sort of things. But now you can get anything under like 5 millisecond IPS or latency on an IPS monitor is like fine. You won't even notice that. So look for IPS. Look for 1080 24 is kind of the best range. Mine was, like I said, 1080 24 monitor, IPS, and I'm very happy with it. And it's was $100 refurbished.
We have a guide as well.
Yes, we do. I linked it in the chat. Nice. If you look for PC Gamer, if you just Google PC Gamer best monitors, best gaming monitors, we have a whole guide on that and budget ideas and sort of things. Like I said, our budget option is actually, I think, a 1080 IPS, nice. 24-inch, like, and it's like $150 or something like that.
That's when I bought
another,
it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, another good thing to do with monitors, I wouldn't necessarily recommend buying from Best Buy, but actually going physically to a Best Buy or a store like that.
If you're in the U.S.
The monitors. If you're in the U.S., you know... or whatever big computer store. So you can actually look at the monitor before you buy it.
Good, yeah.
Then go home and get it off Newegg or whatever refurbished. But, you know, using the physical store as sort of a resource.
There's also a good thing. We do a deals post. If you look up every Monday, PC Gamer has, like, best PC gaming deals. I try to grab monitors in that. And then also if you want a more minute-to-minute kind of update, there is a great subreddit. If you go to reddit.com/r/buildapcsales, it's a very, very kind of active community that gathers sales. You can sort by component type, and they make sure that you're not getting kind of screwed over with your sales because, like I said before in our Black Friday episode, there's a lot of times Amazon will say, this thing is 50% off. And really,
and then
it's,
you look at,
it's never 50% off. It's just that it's like that much money normally.
Right, right.
It's actually, what is
the
it?
The price
Sears?
Matching is hilarious.
There's one Kohl's or Sears or one department store does a similar thing where they always have like a 4x markup on all their goods, but then everything's 50% off. I don't quote me on that. I don't want to get like libeled or anything like
I'm
that.
I'm really excited to check out the subreddit. That's super exciting, and I wish I'd known about that when I built my computer.
Yeah, but, it's very good. Let's take a couple quick ones because we are running out of time. Any opinions? BattleTank09 asks, any opinions on timed exclusives? They're better than full exclusives.
Yeah.
I don't like any type
still
of exclusive.
Still bad, but yeah. It makes sense.
I like it more than not being able to play a game ever.
Much better option, yeah.
Red Dead.
And, you know, if something comes out on a different system first, it gives you time to, like, see what people actually feel about the game. Like, sometimes
you're
like, yeah. You're like, great, I had to wait a year, and everybody says this sucks anyway, so glad I dodged that bullet. But that's still, I'd rather not have
to. Don't pre-order games, guys. Yeah.
And last
I pre-ordered Overwatch just the other day, I have to admit.
That's a safe bet for you guys, at least, I would imagine.
I mean, having played Overwatch consistently. You're just a fan.
It's going to happen anyway, so you guys accepted the inevitable.
Did you see that? I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I've already played it, so I guess it's fine if I pre-order. And Will's just like, oh, Blizzard, oh, my God.
I just really want to get Tracer in Heroes of the Storm when that comes out, so that's going to be exciting.
We'll finish it up with a question for Will. Converter Felix asks, Planetside, which faction is worst in the way of repeating annoying tactics such as Terran Prowler Zergs?
So my main is NC. Prowler Zergs are really annoying, but so are... I play on Connery server, and there's a lot of what we like to call scythe balls. The scythe is an Empire-specific fighter that, you know, I mean, all the Empire-specific fighters are pretty similar. It's an air plane. but on frickin' Connery, like, every once in a while, you'll just get this group of, like, 20 really experienced air fighters who just come into whatever base and just destroy you. And that can be fine. It's fun. There are ways to deal with it. You know, it's all about tactics and response and stuff like that. But Jesus Christ, when they come into an already overpopped base, like the other team has way more pop than you, and they just start just like laying down all this fire. It's like, what are you guys doing? Like, are you having fun? I'm not having fun. But so that's my biggest gripe in terms of the sort of just annoyance.
Why does the amount of soda they have relevant to...
Get out of here.
Okay.
Nobody calls it pop. No, people do.
The East Coast does.
No, I'm from the East Coast. Maybe the South calls it pop.
I don't know.
Nah, back up north is pop.
There you go.
Yeah, it's, I guess
someone
it's
calls it pop.
Mid-north, yeah.
I don't know who. Yeah. Anyway...
also, max crashes when you don't need a max crash. Like, come on, guys.
Keep going.
A nice balanced
battle. Let it out, Will. Let it out.
You've never had a forum like this to just vent about Planetside.
There's only so much you can yell in the chat.
Thank you, everyone, for watching. We will be back next week. So next Tuesday will be our last show of 2015. We will be back Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time at twitch.tv/PCGamer, one of those places. So please join us. We will be talking all of the questions that you had in chat about what our game of the year is, what we look forward to for next year. We're going to be having a lovely thing, and we will also have an end of the year kind of PC gamer recap Cat Fantastic that I'm planning. So that'll be fun, I think.
It'll be fun for you.
It's
going to
be
sure.
It's going to be a blast for me. Whether you guys have fun is totally, you know, up to you. But I hope to see you there. My name is Tom Marks. I've been here with James Davenport and our very special guest, Will Chesney. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.